Edge with Chris Graham.
And this is Chris Graham, and we are talking here on Street Knowledge, and it's been a little bit of time since we last talked on the podcast here. Busy week in Washington, D.C. for me last week, as, well, I was there for the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention's annual Advocacy Week. We also did a 16-mile overnight walk on Saturday night. I say we, my wife Crystal, who's the state director for the Virginia chapter of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, and it was a busy week for those folks lobbying Congress for more funding for mental health research. I was in town, in a support role, but also then got a chance to sit down with Virginia's two U.S. senators, Mark Warner and Tim Kaine, and we're going to, over the course of two separate podcasts here, share our sit-down interviews. I was very fortunate to be able to do sit-down interviews with both Tim Kaine and Mark Warner. And we're here in Virginia. We're very fortunate in this state to have two very powerful state, two powerful U.S. senators representing our state. Both, though, of course, being Democrats in the minority. But Tim Kaine ran for vice president last year. Mark Warner is the vice chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee. So we're talking about people who are movers and shakers in D.C. This first podcast I want to share with you, you clicked on the link. It says Mark Warner's name, right? So you're listening to hear what Mark Warner had to say. Got to talk with Mark. I'll set the scene for this because we're airing these a few days after the interviews. The meeting I had with Mark Warner was on – I mean, it was an interesting week to be in D.C. no matter what the case was. But just to set the scene – I had set up a meeting with staff members for Mark Warner for Wednesday morning, and if you think about last Wednesday morning, that was the day of the tragic shooting in Alexandria involving members of the Republican congressional baseball team. Steve Scalise was among those shot, House Majority Whip, the Republican from Louisiana. And as I'm talking with Mark Warner, I think the interview was about 10:45 or so Wednesday morning. That shooting, of course, happened around 7:15 to 7:30. The news was still very fresh. In fact, I was sitting in Mark Warner's office. I got there a few minutes early, of course, to get ready for the interview. And we were still watching on the TV in the office there in the Hart Senate office building. The press conference with the Alexandria police chief giving some very bare details at that time of the shooting. So it was still very fresh, very raw. And then also that day, so I meet with Mark about 10:45. I think around 11:05, I leave the office. I make it back to the hotel that we were working out of last week, which was only a few blocks away from Capitol Hill. By the time I got back and had downloaded the audio and started transcribing the notes for this interview, I turn on the news and CNN has a breaking news update that Mark Warner had just met with Bob Mueller. Bob Mueller, the special counsel leading the investigation of Russia hacking into the 2016 election. And literally within about an hour of meeting with me, Mark Warner's meet with Bob Mueller, along with Richard Burr, the Republican who's the chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee. And so, I mean, it was, like I say, a very interesting morning to be in D.C. That sets some background for you as we get ready to share the interview that we did with Mark Warner last week. So I think that's enough background. Let's go ahead and get to the interview. We'll come back and talk a little after, kind of wrapping things up for this particular podcast.
Okay, so now you've had a few hours, a night's sleep to compartmentalize, compress, process yesterday's hearing with Attorney General Sessions. What are your thoughts from what he had to say yesterday?
I've got a variety of thoughts. One, I was glad to see that he has faith in Special Prosecutor Mueller. I think it would be a disaster if the president were to try to remove him. I wanted him on the record saying that he would not be involved in that. I felt like I got a non-answer on the question of pardons, whether they'd been discussed or not. again, you know, with a traditional president, you might not consider the fact that he would potentially pardon somebody in the midst of an investigation, but I didn't assume he would fire the FBI head during the middle of an investigation. So I think there's, I'd like to get further clarification. And I just, you know, was disappointed, not surprised, but disappointed by the Attorney General trying to have it both ways. I mean, if you want to exert executive privilege, exert it, and then we can contest. Congress doesn't, you know, Congress regardless doesn't acknowledge executive privilege. We saw in the last administration, you know, the House literally sue Eric Holder on executive privilege. Or if he feels like there's information that's classified, you know, Intelligence Committee respects classification, but he chose neither one. It was like he said he didn't want to respond so he could give the president retrospectively the ability to claim executive privilege. I don't think that has merit. And I think there's, you know, these so-called longstanding Department of Justice procedures. We had some pretty good lawyers on that committee. I don't think any of them had ever heard of that. So my hope is that he will respond to our request, show us those, show us his rationale. And it's, you know, on one hand, I do understand the idea that a president should have the ability to have, you know, candid conversations with his cabinet members on policy matters. But when you're talking about, you know, but this falls into a grayer area in my mind, because we're talking about, you know, a president who appears, by his own words, firing the FBI director because he was concerned about the FBI director's investigation into Russian meddling in the election, and, you know, Russian meddling that may have involved Trump affiliates. So it's, you know, to my mind, that falls in a different category than the normal course of a president discussing, the president discussing the ins and outs of his health care repeal with a cabinet official. That to me has, I'm not making legal judgments here, but that to me has kind of more notion of protection of work product than the idea of the president potentially, you know, firing somebody because he didn't like the direction an investigation was headed. Mm-hmm.
He seemed dismissive of the entire process. Early in the questioning, you were trying to pin him down on simply whether or not he would agree to meet with the committee more times in the future, and I think he verbally said he would, but he didn't seem to like the idea.
Yeah, no, but you can't have, you know, if you're going to be the Attorney General of the United States, you know, one, you got to cooperate with investigations, but two, you know, there was a lot of frustration for people from other members who were members of the Appropriations Committee and members of the Judiciary Committee that he seemed to be cherry picking which committees he wanted to talk to. I mean, if you can't come up and defend your budget request to the committee that grants your budget, how can you do the job?
Mm-hmm. I've been able to talk to you a couple of times since this investigation started. You've been saying, without being able to say too much, that there's more than the public knows behind the scenes, and now we see the report in The Intercept this week. Of course, the testimony from former Director Comey last week. We're very well aware that Russia was very involved in our elections last year. How much further does,
yeah, well,
does
this
go?
I think, one, I'm not going to comment on, you know, leaked documents.
Sure.
And their validity or not.
Sure.
I do think that it is clear, we'll take these in chunks,
sure,
that there is Russian interference in the election, and even more troubling, or equally troubling, Russian interference in a number of states voting process. You know, I don't think there's, again, make me clear, no evidence that they tampered with voter, you know, the actual turnout numbers or the results. But if they were trying to ping on voter files, that ought to be of concern. And one of the things I want to try to do is see if we can get more just of the kind of numbers of states that were attacked declassified, not to embarrass any state, but just to make people warning. I mean, we got elections this year in Virginia. We got, you know, lots of elections next year. So we've got that to go through. We've got to go through the fact that, I mean, one of the senators yesterday was saying, well, you know, we've not seen smoking guns yet. Well, part of that is because we've not talked to any of the people that were affiliated with the Trump campaign that might have had extensive contacts with Russians, because everything has been superseded by the outrageous fact that the president fired the FBI director. You know, if the fact that the president is not cooperating with this investigation, because I mean it's going to take longer, and it means it adds more things to look at.
It has to be concerning that Attorney General Sessions says that he hasn't been briefed on this.
Well, yeah, it says, how would, you know, just even before he was nominated to be Attorney General or selected to be Attorney General, I mean, we had extensive numbers of all senator briefings on the conclusions of the intelligence community. I mean, to me, it also appears, at least from the president's tweets, you know, that the single most, one of the most serious things here is the president still doesn't acknowledge, you know, he still calls this fake news and a witch hunt. How do you take the unanimous opinion of the intelligence community, reject it, and then you see more and more reports of Russian interference? You see Russian interference in the French election, which has been well documented. We're going to see it in the German election. And it appears that the only person that's not taking this seriously is the commander-in-chief. I mean, you know, even all of my Republican colleagues on the committee, even if, you know, there's not a one of them that doesn't think that the Russians massively intervened.
Mm-hmm. And if they didn't know what they were doing in 2016, they can continue to learn more and get better at it, right?
Getting, well, you know, Facebook took down 30,000 sites, fake sites, in France the weekend before the election. Because, you know, the French have this 48-hour blackout period before the election. So if you were going to flood the zone with fake information, that's the perfect time to do it because there's not any reportage. Facebook wouldn't be taking down those sites if they didn't have evidence. So this is, you know, this is definitely a case where they are getting better at these techniques, and we got to be on guard.
How much of your time is taken up by this?
It's pretty, you know, the last couple of weeks has been pretty all-consuming.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I don't see any immediate daylight because, again, we've got all of the people, you know, the names like the Manaforts and Pages and Stones and, you know, all these names that were early on the focus of a lot of attention. You know, we've still got to get documents. We've still got subpoenas out. There are others that are being added. That was where I thought we'd be right now. Talking with those folks instead of dealing with the fallout of the Comey firing.
So we're back talking after you've got a chance to hear the Mark Warner interview that we did last week in his Senate office in D.C. I'll set some other background. I'll talk some background about the day. The last time I met with Mark Warner in Washington, he's in Virginia. We see him several times a year as he makes his way around the valley in central Virginia. We see him here in Virginia at various events, get a chance to talk with him at each of those events. But the last time I was in D.C. with Mark Warner was in 2012. And boy, let me tell you, different environment. Mark Warner at that time, of course, Democrats in 2012 were still in the majority in the Senate. It was the year that Barack Obama was running for re-election. Mark Warner was still in the glow of being a first-term senator, and he had a very nice office. I'll just say that Big office suite with a fireplace in his office of the suite. So I go 5 years later, and that's a long time in political terms. That's an eternity in political years. And the Hart Senate Office Building, if you're in D.C. and you know, if I love D.C., but if you're not a political person necessarily who traipses around Capitol Hill, to set the scene for you, so to speak, all the Senate Office Buildings are on one side of the Capitol. The Capitol's in the middle of Capitol Hill. Literally, it's literally a hill. It's kind of a steep hill, and then on the other side are all the House Office Buildings. So the Hart Office Building is the third of the three. It's the furthest away from the Capitol. And Mark Warner's office is on the seventh floor, and it is literally in the corner on the seventh floor, which is the final floor, the top floor of the Hart Senate Office Building. And he is literally as far back in the corner as you can be on this. I mean, when I was walking up to go to his office and meet him, I actually thought I had missed a turn because I'm walking down a hallway and, you know, I see his office, Senate office number is 703. And I get off the elevator and I'm walking past 725, 726, 727. And the arrow kept saying, you know, go this way to get to 701, 702, and 703. But I'm thinking, man, something's wrong here. He's in a corner, got a small office suite. Yeah, they're working hard. And it's, you know, I'm sure they're not complaining, but yeah, it's different. It's different than it was 5 years ago when the Democrats were the majority. So, you know, there are perks for being in the majority. There are sort of prices you pay when you're not in the majority. And Mark Warner certainly, in that respect, paying the bills a little bit there. But, you know, interesting interview that we did with Mark. No question about that. You know, again, having set the tone when I did before we listened to the conversation I had with Mark. I mean, it was, you know, a lot of this talk obviously is about the investigation into Russia hacking in 2016. Literally the day before Tuesday afternoon, I didn't set this part of the context earlier, but if you think back to last week, Tuesday, so I did this interview with him on Wednesday morning. Tuesday, he had participated in the Senate Intelligence Committee questioning of Attorney General Jeff Sessions too. So, I mean, this was, you know, that was all still fresh in the mind. And then again, within an hour, he was meeting with Bob Mueller, the special counsel, former FBI director, who's leading the investigation into the Russia hack and whatever there may be involving the Trump campaign. So these are odd, interesting times in D.C. And, you know, you heard me ask there towards the end of the interview about how much of Warner's time in the Senate is being consumed by this Russia investigation. And, you know, it's a lot. It's a big deal. You know, he's you know, if you read Augusta Free Press, we keep up with what our senators particularly are doing in D.C. And his Senate office is active in a lot of areas. But, you know, his offices, his aides are, but I think a lot of his attention is definitely on this Russia investigation, and for good reason. You know, as he pointed out in the interview, it is interesting that the Trump administration is trying to downplay the role that Russia played in our 2016 elections, and I think for obvious reasons. I think, and this is me speaking now, not speaking for Mark Warner or anyone else, but it seems to me that, you know, Russia, whether they colluded with the Trump campaign or not, they clearly had a rooting interest in 2016. And I think that the big question is, what did they learn in 2016 that they can apply in 2018, 2020, and beyond? And by denying the validity of this review, this investigation, the Trump administration is, you know, they're at the least, if they're just being ignorant of the realities here, they're making it hard for us to figure out how vulnerable our election systems are and trying to prevent that in the future. That's at the least. At the most, they're covering up collusion. And I don't know that that's the case, but it sure starts to look like it the more and more you look at this. So I'm again not putting those words in Mark Warner's mouth, but I think you could hear it for yourself that there are a lot of questions still to be answered. So if you listen to this podcast, you probably also saw on our website or on Twitter or on Facebook that we also did an interview with Senator Tim Kaine. Thanks for listening to this one. And I'd like you to listen to that one. It's a different tone in that interview. We'll, you know, kind of get both sides of our Virginia U.S. senators who were Democrats on Capitol Hill and their perspectives and what they're working on hard. But this was interesting, no question about it. Thanks for listening, and please do listen to that Tim Kaine interview. Signing off for Street Knowledge, I am Chris Graham.